mentored by some of the best minds in entrepreneurship in the world, then you're listening to the right podcast, Ditch Digger CEO. We're going to be interviewing CEOs and founders who will be telling their amazing rags-to-riches stories. These entrepreneurs who dominate the industries they serve will be sharing the secrets to their success. We'll be talking to millionaires and billionaires, many who started with nothing. You're going to be mentored with golden nuggets of shared experiences from my guest, whose time is worth thousands and even tens of thousands of dollars per hour. I started in the paving business right out of high school, and with no college education, mentorship has been my education of choice. I started over 25 companies in the last 20 years, have generated over $1.5 billion in revenues. My guarantee is this. If you listen to Ditch Digger CEO and you want to be more successful, you will become more successful. The secrets of my success and for many of the world's greatest business leaders will be revealed. Let Ditch Digger CEO mentor you.
Hey, here we are today at Ditch Digger CEO again with a fabulous guest. This gentleman is doing the coolest stuff in the world when it comes to business and relationships and all the other things that we think about when it comes to growing businesses and growing relationships with the best people we can find in the world. So Dr. Ivan Meisner has done some amazing things. You're going to hear his story. And we're excited about the learning that we're all going to do while we listen to what I believe is he's got to be one of the best networking guys I've ever seen in the world. So Dr. Ivan Meisner, welcome to Ditch Digger CEO. Thanks for being here today.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate being invited.
You know what? I've grown my businesses over the last 40 years consistently because of relationship building and just, you know, being part of some networks, some great networks that I've enjoyed, and then kind of building my own networks where I think I need to, where they're not, right?
Right.
And I've really reading your story and stuff. It's amazing what you've done. Just want to hear about that. You know, our Ditch Digger CEO is all about people building things from the ground up and building businesses that are successful, businesses and industries. We want them to be, you know, leaders in the industry. And boy, you sure are that, man. And so if you could just, you know, share your story with us, we'd appreciate that. Maybe, you know, we'd like to start from kind of who you were. I mean, let's first start with what you do, who you are, your business, what you do. And then we kind of go to, you know, what did you learn as a kid growing up? What did your parents teach you? What were your best mentors taught you? And then what differentiates you to be able to do what you've done and build this great business?
Well, I'm the founder of an organization called BNI. BNI stands for Business Network International. We have 10,900 groups in more than 76 countries around the world. We get together every week and pass each other referrals. Our members get together on a weekly basis, one person per profession, and they pass each other referrals. In the last 12 months, we passed about 12 million referrals and close to that in billions of dollars.
Okay, hold on a second. 12 months, 12 million referrals.
Yeah, about that. I mean, actually, it might be. I can give you the exact number in a minute.
We can go a wrong number. That's pretty cool. Those are big numbers. I love it.
Yeah, and the amazing thing about it is that we have generated more business for our members than 77 countries in the world. then the GDP of 77 countries in the world. All right, so here's the exact numbers. 13 million referrals, 20.6 billion with a B, $20.6 billion worth of business. So there are 77 countries in the world with a lower GDP than we generated for our members in the last 12 months. If BNI were a country, we would be the 113th largest country in the world for GDP.
So that's you're saying the history of BNI has created that much, not just
no, just the last 12 months.
Oh, so yeah, so it's there's countries where less than $20 billion of GDP.
Yeah, just in the last 12 months, we've done over $20 billion. In thank you for closed business. That's the amount of referrals that those 13 million referrals.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Unblows my way. So your organization.
And by the way, that's the number that the members report. That's what they say they generate. Yeah. So
it's a good number. So what numbers? What you know, those numbers definitely aren't stated.
Sometimes, right? Yeah, correct. Sometimes they're not included.
That's awesome, man. So Tell me where this all started. You know, tell me how you got started in this world of massive business networking, and how you thought there was a market for it, and how you created this market. Now this is a for-profit business.
Yeah, it's a franchise. B&I is a franchise with franchises all over the world.
Tell us the beginnings of B&I.
Well, I'd like to say I had this vision of an international organization, but the truth is I needed some referrals for my consulting practice. My doctoral work is in organizational behavior. I was a management consultant, and I put together a group of people who I hoped would be willing to refer me business, and I was willing to refer them business. And it just snowballed. Someone came who couldn't join because we take only one person per professional classification. And she couldn't join because her classification was represented. And she said, "This is great. I could get a ton of business out of a group like this. Would you help me open up my own group?" And I said, "No, this isn't what I do. I'm a business consultant. I don't run a network." And she said, no, this is kind of consulting. You're helping me build my business." I said, "Okay, fine. I'll do a second group." And we did a second group, and two people came to the second group who couldn't join because of their classification was represented. And both of them said, "This is great. I could get a ton of business. Would you help me open up my own group?" And I'm like, "No, this isn't what I do. I'm a business consultant." And they talked me into it. And at the end of the year, we had 20 groups by accident.
What does a group look like, Ivan?
It's one person per profession. So there's, there might be a chiropractor, a florist, an accountant, an attorney, a computer person. I mean, a printer. One person per professional classification. Now you might have a couple of people from the same profession, but they're in different classifications. Like a commercial real estate agent and a residential real estate agent. You might have an attorney who does family law, an attorney who does business law. So different classifications.
How many people are average? How many people in a group?
The statistical mean worldwide is somewhere around 26, but we have chapters that are larger than 100 people in a group around the world. And like I said, we're in 76 countries, 10,900 chapters in more than 76 countries around the world. And so at the end of a year, it was really obvious to me that this was going to be much larger. And that's when I sat down and created a plan to scale the operation and to really grow it substantially, which we have.
What year was that?
I started B&I in January of 1985. When I realized that it was going to be much bigger, it was in December of 85. Between Christmas and New Year's, where I usually sit down and I reflect, how did last year go compared to my plan? And that particular year was like, what the heck happened? This was not what I expected. And then where do I want to be in a year and in 5 years? And that's when I realized that this could be huge and I needed to sit down and create a plan to scale it.
Awesome. That's exciting. I mean, okay, so Tell me about then. What were you in year? Let's say year four, five. After that start and building the foundation, where did it take you? Year four or five, let's say.
Well, one of the first things I did in the first couple of years, 85, 86, 87, right in there, was I read Michael Gerber's book, The E Myth. It stands for the Entrepreneurial Myth, and it's a great book. I didn't know Michael then. He and I are good friends now. But I read that book, and one of the things it talked about was how do you scale a business and how do you work on the business, not in the business. And so I did a lot of the things that Michael talked about, one of which was, he says in the E-Myth, write everything down about your business as though you plan on franchising your business. Even if you don't plan on franchising, write it all down like you were going to franchise it. I thought, well, that's a great idea. I'm never going to franchise this, but sure, yeah, that's a great idea. So I wrote everything down. And then, 4 or 5 years into it, I'm like, well, wait a minute, why can't I franchise this? This is actually quite franchisable. And around 89 or so, I started to work on developing it into a franchise. So by 1991, we started franchising the operation.
Not by 1991.
Yeah, 6 years into it. But I started the process four and a half years into it. It takes a little while. Even then, it took a little while. Now it takes even longer unless you get a lot of money.
Yeah, no, I've got a bunch of friends in the franchise world that are franchisors, and many that have bought a bunch of franchises and stuff. And we build our businesses based on based on if we're going to sell it to tomorrow at the highest price, right? Mm-hmm. So we believe that, hey, we're not aggressively selling any business we own, but we want to know that there's great value in these businesses, that people will say, hey, there's a clear enterprise value. We can take the leader out of this business, and there's a clear enterprise value of this business that's going to grow.
Right.
Because they really built a great foundation. And you know, kind of similar, you build a great franchise model, you can choose a franchise or not, it's going to be a great business because you've got the foundation, right?
Right.
For that.
We have a lot of company-owned regions for B&I, but there's also a lot of franchises. It's probably close to 50-50 or maybe more than 50% franchise.
So company, how many franchises are all together?
Oh, there's over 1,000 regions in B&I, and probably at least, I'm guessing around 60% of them are franchised.
So you have about 400 that are company-owned?
Roughly, give or take. It's been a while since I looked at that number. So I've gone, you know, about 8 years ago, I went from being, the CEO of the organization, being King Arthur leading the charge. I went from King Arthur to Colonel Sanders, and I'm sort of the spokesperson for the organization now. So I don't run the day-to-day operations anymore. But this is what I get to do, which is really cool. I get to do lots of interviews and talk about scaling a business and talk about networking.
We're pretty similar. We're probably pretty close in age too. I started my business in 1981 out of high school, and I'm kind of the same thing, right? I actually shaved off my gray beard last week for the first time. These guys are the first time seeing me without my beard. But I'm kind of the Colonel Sanders of my business too.
And that's a great while to be in.
It's a lot of fun, right? We can
absolutely
sell them to the biggest customers, or we could be, you know, to promoting the brand, and how much fun is that compared to?
Oh yeah, promoting the brand is a lot of fun. You know, I tell people I'm a 20-year overnight success. It took me 20 years to build a business, and the last, you know, 15, 18 years I've been, you know, having fun.
It's you know, the American dream is very accessible if you got a great product to sell, the great customers and great people that you can help build your business with you, right?
Exactly.
So I think we're in a very similar place. It's really cool. So tell me this, what is a franchise like? What does a franchise look like? Tell me who do you have, who runs the franchise for you, let's say, or who owns the franchise, or who runs your company owned, store or whatever it is, unit. And what tell me the difference between those and what they look like.
Well, locally owned franchises operated by somebody who lives in the community or near the community, and they open up multiple chapters. There might be 5, 10, 20, 30 B&I groups within a franchise. And a company-owned region is very much the same, except it's the person or people running it are people who work for B&I headquarters. One of the interesting things about technology is that it's actually made company-owned regions easier, because the technology flattens the communication hierarchy and enables you to train and communicate with the people all over the world much easier than it was in 1985. You know, in 1985, when I started B&I and started expanding by 86, the second largest line item in my budget, the second largest, was the phone bill. The employees were number one. Phone bill was number two. I had an 800 number. It was crazy money to make long distance calls. Now, I don't even know where the phone bill is in our budget. Buried somewhere. It's nothing.
Thought, I think about mid-80s to late 80s, we got those bag phones, okay? You're really important if you had a bag phone, right? Because they cost you like $2,000-$3,000.
Yeah.
Your monthly bill, you know, you're only going to be in the zone or in the zone or whatever the phone works for, maybe 20, 30, 40% of the time.
Yeah.
You pull over the side of the phone and you're really important in that cul-de-sac making that call, right? Because you're in the cell.
I remember the phones when they were, you know, the big bricks. They were like a walkie-talkie.
Exactly. So same thing. Then you had the thing that goes to the battery goes to the car, the trunk car.
But they were car phones. They weren't mobile phones. They were car phones. Yeah.
That's right. And okay, so think about that from where we've come now. You're saying how much the phone bills. Well, my phone bill got to be crazy when I and my right hand person got those bag phones, and they're like $1,800, $2,500 a month in
back in the 80s or 90s, where there was crazy numbers.
That's right. So again, So you're right. No, so go back. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just think about that back in those days, you know, how crazy it was that your phone bills at home or if you had a cell phone, if you're blessed enough to be able to afford one of those things, right? Right. And so now where you're at today, totally different world.
Oh, totally. I mean, look at this. We're on online having a conversation in multiple locations. I just had a conversation about 2 hours ago with somebody in the UK on Zoom, somebody in the UK and somebody in India at the same time. It costs nothing or virtually nothing. And, you know, the technology, as I said earlier, it flattens the communication hierarchy. My podcast, my blog, my social media allows people around the world to connect with me directly in a way they never could have 20, 30 years ago. I mean, imagine trying to connect with me without social media. You'd have to call my office, get a receptionist, get transferred to my assistant. My assistant would be, you know, the roadblock.
You wouldn't think I wanted your business much if I didn't fly to you and talk to you face to face.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that as well. So, I mean, the technology has really made business quite a bit different in the last 30 years.
Yeah, as you know, I started up, seal coating driveways and then patching parking lots and paving parking lots, right? Today we pave more parking lots than about anybody in the country. But our technology has brought us there more than anything. Not only technology in the field to make us, you know, allow us to pave concrete faster and asphalt faster, higher quality. Okay, that's been great. You know, we use GPS, we use robotics and all kinds of cool things, right? 3D paving of concrete. We have a blast doing really cool things in the field. But technology, when it comes to electronics, like we're talking on today and stuff, is really made a difference in our industry. We use drones today and artificial intelligence to give away the best engineering in the world that we can find to our customers. And those drones are loaded up with the best engineering you can imagine that assess and then do due diligence on the biggest parking lots in the world. And so, again, you know, only 7 years ago, our industry, I would fly engineers all over the country to help my biggest customers figure out their biggest challenges, solve their biggest problems on parking lots and big distribution centers that the pavements weren't lasting, they're falling apart. And so we would give them solutions to make them right. And now 7 years later, we're doing that. We're not flying engineers all over the country anymore. We fly drones. So we have a drone pilot in the marketplace that flies the property. And then that drone has all the engineering loaded in it. So think about that. It went from about $30,000, $40,000 to go do where I'm talking to do in a million square foot property to a couple thousand dollars today. And it went from taking 3 to 5 weeks to get this done for our customer to about it anywhere from 2 to 3 days, right?
Right.
So, I mean, technology, if we embrace it, as you have and I have and a lot of our friends have, it's amazing where the industry can go.
Right. And a lot of people think that, you know, because I run an in-person network that we're not very focused on technology, but, you know, BNI has been an early adopter in technology for many, many, many years. Our domain name is BNI.com. You can't have a three-letter domain if you weren't an early adopter. And so we have been an early adopter in technology for a long time. Our organization has a platform that's sort of like LinkedIn, but it's a walled garden. It's only for BNI members. So our 300,000 members can connect with each other online all over the world, and they do. And it's really quite effective. During COVID, we transitioned all 10,000 chapters from in-person. 10,000 in-person meetings every week, we transferred over to online, literally within weeks in every country. And that's what enabled us to continue to grow. BNI has grown. We have 38 years of consecutive growth. There are very few organizations in the world that can say that they have actually grown every year for 38 years. We have done that. And we helped our businesses, a lot of businesses, survive during the COVID years.
What's the size of an average business when you think about, you know, chapter by chapter, just an average size business across the globe for you?
Well, it varies. It varies depending on the country. For example, in Asia, particularly in India, some of the businesses are much larger. They have a lot of employees. In the U.S., it's probably a little bit smaller. But, you know, most of our members are million-dollar companies or more for the most part. But it, you know, average is an interesting statistic because if your head is in the freezer and your feet are in the oven, on average, you're okay. So you know, statistics are a little bit different, a little interesting. But our members, I mean, for example, some of our members are employees for billion-dollar companies. You know, they're employees for real estate companies or banks, and yeah. So it's hard to say what the average size is because we have, you know, salespeople and representatives of banks, and we have an attorney or an accountant. Sure. So it really varies.
And you know, when you look at the 10,000 chapters or, you know, 1,000 regions, you know, what's the U.S. percentage of that compared to India, Asia, or anywhere else?
The U.S. now represents about 25% of the organization worldwide.
25%?
Roughly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more, 27%.
And then where's your next biggest market?
The next biggest market would probably be India.
Okay.
India will be the largest market, I think, for BNI. That's my prediction. India is on fire. They're growing like crazy. I'll tell you one of the things about India that I really admire is Indians are Americans in the 50s. They are hungry for knowledge.
Yeah.
They want information. They are sponges for information, knowledge, expertise. They don't take anything for granted. They are on fire. And they, to be honest with you, I think North Americans and to a lesser extent, Europeans have become a little bit overconfident.
Complacent.
Definitely complacent compared to markets like India, which are, they're just sponges for knowledge and information. And we really need to get that back.
100%.
Want to continue to be world leaders in the marketplace.
100%. You know, that's something I'm very passionate about building businesses, but I'm also passionate about a couple of organizations I serve in on the board of, or a couple of organizations that are really out to really defend or protect the American dream. And that means just, you know, protecting small businesses and jobs, because without small businesses, innovation that comes from that, our country is not what it should be or what it once was. Yeah, and I believe that, you know, we've got regulatory crazy people and regulatory.
I don't get into politics or religion in BNI, so I'll stay out of that discussion, although I do have opinions. I just did a quick calculation. The U.S. represents a little over 30% of the organization worldwide.
30%?
Yeah, about 30% worldwide.
But I don't get into, I'm not a big politician myself. I ran for governor as not a politician, but I do believe that the regulatory environment in Illinois is killing the American dream for our future kids and stuff. So that's something that I believe, you know, the small business like you represent, that you're in front of, that I'm in front of, could be the, you know, the solution if we fight hard against the stupid regulations that are hurting us, you know. So,
well, I'm a believer in small business, but I will stay out of the politics issue. And I'll tell you why. We have found that political discussion is, it creates animosity within a chapter. It creates anxiety and fights within a group. So we actually have a policy in BNI that you can't discuss politics or religion. It's just, it's divisive that people will start fighting over it. So
I
don't go that direction, which is ironic. It's ironic because my bachelor's degree is in political science. So I have to bite my tongue to not do what I was taught in college. To not do within my own organization.
Well, your organization is focused 100% on doing business with each other by networking together, helping each other in the business world. So in taking politics and religion out, you focus on that directly.
Yep, exactly.
You don't get taken off in another direction. First, as far left and far right that really wants to grow their business engages in your business model. And when you take and put something in there that could be divisive, it hurts, right?
It does. And that's why we tell our members, stay out of politics and religion. You know, go do that outside the BNI platform.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Be active. That's great. Just not inside the BNI platform.
Yeah. Good. No, that's a great way. I mean, this is why you've grown so much. You've understood the things that are resistors to your growth, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's cool. Okay. So when, When we think about, I'm in YPO. YPO has been a blessing to me as I got to be big enough to be YPO. Unfortunately, I like what you're talking about, because most companies don't get to be, most small businesses don't get to be YPO sized businesses. And, you know, there's EEO and there's a couple other things out there, but even YPO isn't the best networking. We can do networking with a YPO, but you're not sharing business as much and doing business as much in YPO as something like you're talking about.
Well, so YPO is a knowledge network. It's to share information and ideas, which is really good. Yeah. It's different. There are different kinds of networks. There are knowledge networks. There are referral networks like BNI. There are casual contact networks like a Chamber of Commerce. There are service networks like Rotary, Lions, Kiwanis. Yeah. Different kinds of networks. I've always recommended that you participate in a few different types of networking organizations.
Sure. And so how do you feel? I can feel it already, but tell us how you differentiate your top three differentiators from any other networking group.
Well, first and foremost, it's about referrals. I mean, we generated 20 billion, we talked about that in referrals. I mean, nobody else is doing that. I think that's a huge differentiator. I think culture is a critical differentiator in terms of business development. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. Culture is the secret sauce for a successful organization. In BNI, one of our principal core values is this idea of giver's gain. And to me, giver's gain is such an important philosophy for our organization. It is our principal core value in the organization. And it's giver's gain is more than a phrase. It's a way of living one's life. It's a perspective to view and interact with the world. It's an attitude, not an expectation. And when it's applied properly, it'll change your life. And when it changes enough lives, it'll change the world. And I think that's one of the things that sets us aside as an organization. So the last one would be the structure, the system, the processes. We've got a system and a process that we use. And a lot of people go, well, I don't like all the structure. Well, I'm sorry. You know, you got to have structure in order to be successful. Hockey without rules would be boxing on ice. You got to have rules. You know, you got to have processes.
I like that.
Yeah, and those are some of the things that differentiate BNI from other organizations.
Yeah, hockey would be boxing. I like that, without rules. Okay, so yeah, you know, I 100%, you know, I like the giver's gain thing. I mean, because, you know, if you give first, sometimes you understand how much you gain in your life, right? Whether it be business or personal or whatever. But you know, our slogan is that innovating to serve. So we're going to be the most innovative in our space. Our innovation is going to create differentiation to serve our customers better than anybody else in the world. So, I mean, it's the same concept, right? If we innovate to serve our customers better than anybody else, to solve their problems like nobody else, we're going to earn their business. So we're just going to get better. And you're saying the same thing, all right? You know, givers gain. When if you're a taker, I'm sorry, you're probably not going to gain a lot in life.
Yeah, but you're talking about giving to or serving your client. I'm taking it a step further than that. I'm talking about serving other businesses besides your client, that you are helping other businesses. And if you help other businesses that aren't even your clients, they will help you. That's really the core of giver's gain. The real thing that makes giver's gain work within a network is that you bring in people that are in different professions, you give to them, you help them, you support them, and they will do the same for you. Now, yeah. being a giver doesn't mean that you're going to be a victim. At some point, you know, you got to say, wait a minute, you know, if you're not helping me back, this isn't working. And so you want a reciprocal kind of relationship at some point. But it can't be transactional. It's got to be relational.
100%. I mean, again, you serve and you give, like you're saying, right? 90% of the time, people feel it. They're going to want to give back, and they do.
And they're going to want to give back, yeah.
But to talk about that, I mean, there's nothing wrong with talking with somebody you're serving and giving them, you know, opportunities to be able to say, hey, you know, I'm glad you met my 10 customers and you're doing business with five of them. You got a few customers that I'd love to meet as well, right? I mean, that's part of the conversation for sure.
Yeah, it is part of the conversation. You know, people have asked me, what do I do when I've given referrals to people and they haven't given referrals to me? What I tell them to do is almost exactly what you just said, is I tell them, sit down with that person and review the referrals that you've given them. How did this one work out? How did that one work out? How did that one work out? And you might find out that none of them worked out.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. You might find out that all those referrals that you thought were good weren't. Yeah. In which case you need to say to the person, okay, I need to do a better job of giving you referrals. How can I do a better job? Or you may find out those referrals did work out, in which case you want to go the direction that you just said, which is, I'm really glad those have worked out. It would be great if maybe you could find a way to possibly reciprocate and give some referrals to me. And what I have found is that when people do that, the other person will go, wow, you're absolutely right. I haven't done a good job of reciprocating. Let's talk. And so it's about clear, open, honest, and direct communication by giving first.
Sure. I love it. No, I think it sounds simple, but not very often people live by that, right?
Just yeah. Like, it's simple, but not easy. If it were easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah, exactly. So what is let's say, again, if we think about your company-owned franchisees and that are, pardon the franchisor, I guess, would be, then your franchisees. Is it a couple person team based in that franchise, or can they be as much as
there? Depends on the size of the region. All told, there are almost 10,000 people who work for the company worldwide. It's a big operation.
Yes, it is. So again, it's in a region, it might be 100 people. Is that right? And a franchise, it might be.
I mean, the corporate has got at least 100 people who work for corporate. And then in the individual regions, there are many executive directors, regional directors, director consultants, administrative people. There are many, many different positions within the organization worldwide.
So, I mean, again, so if you have one in the Chicagoland area, you guys got some in Illinois in the Chicagoland area?
Oh, yeah, we have a lot in the area.
And that their job is it was like a sales leader first that sells, that builds these, that contacts and sells?
We would have a director that's a launch director, a director who kicks off chapters. Then we have a support director, a director who supports the chapters, because skill set that it takes to launch a chapter is a different skill set. The skill set than it takes to support a group of people. And then the executive director or the area director, the person who runs the region, is the manager who oversees it, whether they're a franchise owned or a company owned region, there's a person who oversees the operations. And then there are what we call director consultants. Those are people who go visit chapters on a regular basis. You have to have somebody visiting chapters once every 6 to 8 weeks just to help make sure that everything is maintained. And you have training directors. You've got people who are teaching people how to do this because, you know, we don't teach this in colleges and universities anywhere in the world. So there are different positions to do different things. It's like any organization.
Really cool. All different businesses, right? I mean, in a marketplace, once in a while, you're going to do some different industries that aren't in others, maybe, right? But I mean, from manufacturing, professional services, construction services, about anything, right?
Yeah, a lot of construction, a lot of professional services, health-related services. We get some manufacturing, mostly, like I said, in Asia seems to be where we have most of the manufacturing, India, China, Hong Kong. We have a lot more manufacturing related businesses, but mostly service related in North America and Europe that are members. Every once in a while you get some really strange profession, like, I remember in the US we had a commercial light bulb salesman. I mean, you know, you couldn't give him a mercy referral. I'll buy some light bulbs from you. These were light bulbs that were in industrial complexes. You know, if you ever gone into a big factory, flip the light switch and it takes like 2 minutes for the light to actually kind of come up. They're special light bulbs. That's what he sold. We had a person who was a pet shipper in Europe. They shipped pets from one country to another. I mean, you get some unusual professions in the organization, but for the most part, they're professions that you would recognize, you know.
Sure.
And if you drove down Main Street, you'd recognize them.
But even in some cases, I gotta imagine, some cases when there's not maybe a great referral opportunity for some industries, right? They're just not dealing business with, you know, local mom and pops or other people in your network. There's gotta be great learning opportunity besides that, right?
Well, yes, absolutely. There are a lot of learning opportunities, and BNI's got a platform called Business Builders, which it's a whole educational platform on how to get referrals, how to give referrals. But, you know, I have found that it has less to do with the profession than it does the person. Let's take the commercial light bulb salesman. When he wanted to join, I told him, I remember his name. This was like 30 years ago. His name was Norty. And I said, Norty, I have no commercial light bulb salesman in BNI. I don't know if this will work for you. He's like, no, this will be great. I'm like, oh, okay. And he joined. And I went back to the region a year later, and he stood up at his chapter and he said, Ivan tried to talk me out of joining the group, but I just won a sales contest for my company. And I got 40% of all the referrals I got during this contest, I got from BNI. He was trying to talk me out of joining the group, and I'm getting sent on a Caribbean vacation. He told me, he said, look, the truth is, it's about building relationships with people. And when you build relationships with people, you can get referrals. And he did. Commercial light bulb salesman. He increased his sales dramatically.
That's awesome. Now, is there any type of competitive nature of your organization? In other words, when somebody gets 100 referrals within their group and another guy gets 80, are they competing for 120 or 50, 150? Or is there anything like that that goes on or no?
Well, there might be, some personal competition between people. But I think the one gamification, if you're going to call it that, I would call it that, is that we have what we call a traffic light program. Green, yellow, red, gray. And members and chapters that are really doing well are in the green. And so if there's any kind of competition, it's members trying to stay in the green. And you stay in the green by bringing referrals, by bringing visitors to the group, by CEUs, by educating yourself on networking more effectively. There are a number of things that increase your score to be in the green. And so that's the one thing we do in terms of competition. We want chapters to be successful. And if you want to be successful, the members are in the green.
So when you, I heard, green, yellow, red, but gray said too, right? What is gray?
Gray's bad. Gray's very bad.
Is that right?
Yeah. The gray, you might want to find some other network to participate in, not ours.
I like that.
The people in the gray are what we call minnows, members in name only.
All right. I like rhinos, but minnows. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So when you think of where you could go in the future, looking at where you're at, 10,000 people at work that really have this as their main thing that they do every day.
No, it's 300,000 members, 10,000 people.
I'm saying 10,000 people actually are employed basically.
Full or part time. Yes.
Full or part time. They're passionate. They're employed. Then you've got 300,000 members. Where do you see this thing going? Can it get much bigger or what?
Oh, yeah. We could have over 1 million members. No question about it.
Awesome. Do you have a vision? Are you part of that visionary team? Are you the visionary still?
Actually, absolutely. I'm the founder and chief visionary officer. So my vision for the organization is to have over 1 million members within 10 to 15 years. And I think that's quite possible because we're moving more and more to the technology and the online platform. So we went from 100% in person to 100% online during COVID. And we did it, like I said, almost overnight. Today, 68% of our organization is meeting in person. 68% has gone back to in person. 16% has gone to 16% has gone back to 16% has stayed online. So 68% has gone back to in-person, 16% has stayed online, and 16% has done hybrid, which is one meeting a month in person and the rest online. So I think the future of the organization probably is in the hybrid, where you have this combination of in-person and online. And the more you have online, the easier it is to expand and grow. And so I think it's pretty easy for us to be able to create a bigger online presence and grow quicker.
Yeah, that makes sense. And how many meetings a year or a month is it? Is it 4 meetings?
Well, it's every week. Now, usually during holidays, the chapter will go dark, like around New Year's or religious holidays that may exist in various countries around the world. But it's every week. So on average, chapters meet, you know, 49, 50 weeks a year.
And is it hour meetings, 2 hour meetings? What are they?
Hour and a half meeting, depending on the size of the chapter. If you have a chapter of 100 members, it's going to be longer than that. But generally, the average is about an hour and a half meeting. And they're almost all in the morning. Some are in the afternoon at lunch. Some are in the afternoon or evening. But the overwhelming majority is in the morning.
How does people own multiple franchises?
You mean, could you be in two chapters?
No, I mean, it's franchise model. So is this your franchisees, do they own just one? They own one
model? People own more than one franchise. We're trying to limit that a little bit more, but some people own more than one franchise.
What's that?
Individual could only be in one chapter of BNI, but your company could be in more than one chapter if you send different people to the various chapters.
And what are the type of revenue uses does an average franchisee generate?
Well, that's an FDD question that you'd have to look at the, you know, federal disclosure documents for that.
Okay. All right. So,
and it varies by country. You know, the amount of revenue in Nigeria is going to be a lot different than Manhattan.
Sure. Of course.
You know, again, it's, you know, if your head is in the freezer and your feet are in the oven, on average, it's X.
So, yeah,
the average is substantially different depending on the country. And we're in 76 countries, so.
Well, all right. So I know that I've got two minds on the line here with me there. Want to ask questions as much as I do, so I'll probably ask him too many questions. Joey's a young entrepreneur, and my nephew actually, and he's in Northern Illinois right now, and we've got Chris, our producer, who's on as well. You guys throw some questions at this amazing mind of ours, or this amazing entrepreneur.
Hi. Oh, hey. Thank you for your time. So as a young entrepreneur as myself, how do I, let's say if I wanted to join a group like yours, how would I be able to do that? Because certain groups, you have to be at a certain status and make a certain amount. But like, how can I, you know, be able to learn and grow and I guess take in the knowledge of everything that your business does?
Yeah, you know, so I have some BNI chapters that are sticklers about bringing in businesses of a certain size. I have mixed feelings about that. I really believe that ignorance on fire is better than knowledge on ice. That somebody who is young and hungry and excited can be way better than somebody who is, you know, successful and complacent. And so, I mean, I think about when I started BNI, my consulting business was only a couple years old. My consulting business was only a couple of years old when I started BNI. There are chapters of BNI today that would not accept me as a member 38 years ago.
Wow.
So, you know, it's like, you got to take a look at the person. If that person's on fire and hungry, you take them. And so it doesn't matter if you're young and if you don't have a ton of experience, but if you're good at what you do and you're on fire, you're the kind of person that should be in a BNI network. And I think the best chapters are the chapters that have a balance. They have some people with some gray hair and a lot of experience and knowledge, and they have some people that have been around for 10 years, and they have some people who are new in business, because those new people bring an excitement to the business that the, you know, the old guys with the gray hair don't quite have. And so it's that balance that you're looking for.
Okay. And then as your younger self, coming up as an entrepreneur, what was the greatest fears that you had to overcome that led you on the journey that you are today?
Well, I think, you know, one of the first things that I had to overcome was my concern about making mistakes. I had someone say to me once, don't worry about making mistakes. You will. Get over it. And just when you make a mistake, try to rectify it as soon as possible. Come clean with it and rectify it as soon as possible. And that was good advice. And he was right. I made lots of mistakes as I went along the way. I think One of the most important things I've learned in the last 38, 40 years is that if you want to be successful in business, you got to do 6 things 1,000 times, not 1,000 things 6 times. And most businesses do 1,000 things 6 times. They bounce from one idea to another idea to another idea, and they can never make it come together. Huge mistake. What you want to do is a handful of things, and it doesn't have to be 6, but it could be 7. It's a handful of things that you do over and over and over and over again consistently. If I have any superpower as a business professional, it is that I am a dog with a bone. I will work something and work it and work it and work it until I get it to where I want it to be. It's about doing 6 things 1,000 times. That's what BNI is about. It's about meeting every week, and getting to know people, build relationships with them, refer them. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And so the more you can do that, the more you can go into it with that mentality, the more likely you are to scale whatever it is that you're doing. That's how I've achieved some success in what I do.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Yeah, great questions. Christopher?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, Dr. Visor, thank you so much for sharing your time with us. This is really inspiring.
My pleasure, Chris. Call me Ivan, please.
Okay, yeah, Ivan, thank you. You were just doing something that you thought was fun, that was helping your business, and then you're like, oh wow, this is spiraling out of control in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Run like crazy. I'm always curious, you know, with someone who went from basically like an idea, even like the seed of an idea, to, you know, 10,000 plus people over 76 countries. How did you, you know, over that journey, it's been, you know, I was born in 85, so older than I
am. Yeah.
So how did you stay true to your original vision and culture while growing, you know, to such a large place?
Yeah, well, in culture, eat strategy for breakfast. It's the secret sauce for a successful organization. So the key is to create core values, and those core values become the DNA of the organization. So early on in BNI, I started working on core values that we really focused on in BNI, Givers Gain being the first one, which I've talked about, but building relationships, lifelong learning, several others like recognition and accountability. Accountability is really important. In a network, it becomes very social, and you know, nobody wants to go to a coffee clatch on a regular basis. So you got to have systems and structure and whatnot. So these are some of the things that we built as core values. And if you want to scale a business, you have to have strong core values in place so that you're constantly teaching and training people on those core values. If you went to any PNI chapter anywhere in the world and you said, what's the principal core value of BNI? What's the philosophy of BNI? I would be shocked if you didn't hear from that chapter the words Givers Gain. It's one of the things that we've done really well, is that we have inculcated this philosophy into the 10,000 plus chapters of the organization. And I think that's one of the secrets of scaling a business, is creating core values that people recognize and can repeat, which means you have to have a clear vision statement, a clear mission statement, and of course, clear core values. And only a handful. If you have like 10 or 15 core values, it's too many for people to remember. It's got to be a handful for people to remember.
What are your core values?
Givers Gain, lifelong learning, building relationships, recognition, accountability, positive attitude. Those are the core values of BNI.
Awesome.
Did they evolve over the 38 years?
They did. They evolved over time, probably over a 5 or 10 year period. We, you know, added them up until we got about 7 core values.
Awesome. Chris, you've heard that from the best of them, have you, Chris? Core values and living by those core values mean so much, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that would probably be arguably the strongest through line through all of our, you know, most prominent guests, like core values, culture. I love the way you said culture eats strategy for breakfast. We've heard ideas like that, but never summed up so succinctly.
Yeah, it's the secret sauce to a successful organization. You know, you can have great systems and processes, but if you don't have a really good culture, it'll fall apart. But if you have a great culture and your system and processes are in progress, people are forgiving. You know, they were for us. They were very forgiving in the early days of us trying to figure out how to do this because we had a great culture. So the culture, you know, makes people sort of forgiving about the things that you might do wrong along the way.
Yeah, and that those core values are kind of the North Star.
They are, yeah.
What we use it for is, hey, when we have issues and challenges within our organization, our team, there's usually something in those core values we're missing. You know, that person or that team is not you know, really hammering home, whether it's accountability, which is a common one of ours, or whatever, right? I mean, I think it's important to not just have those up on the wall like I did for the first, you know, 15 years of my business, just kind of hand them up on the wall, stuff that I believed in. No.
You got to train on it. The one I left out was traditions plus innovation. That was the seventh one. And I did those two as one core value because traditions tell us where you come from as an organization. Innovation tells you where you want to go. One of the things that we do is we have videos on the core values. Our members can see the videos on the core values. But one of the things we do with every new employee is we have employee boot camp. You have to go through boot camp in order to be a full-time employee for the company. And part of the boot camp is learning the core values and being able to answer a test on the core values and then talk about the core values. And one of the things our CEO does at every staff meeting, is he opens up the staff meeting by asking somebody, and he'll just call on somebody, tell us about one of the core values that resonates most with you. And so the core values are touched upon regularly within the organization. And that's the way to create a great culture, or at least one of the ways to create a great culture.
I love it.
Can you tell us about your book, Who's in Your Room?
Yeah, absolutely. The Who's in Your Room is, I love this book. The concept of Who's in Your Room, and I now have the second edition. So we've got two editions of the book. Second edition just came out this year. Here's the concept. Imagine you live your life in one room, and that one room has only one door. And that one door is an enter-only door. So that when people come into your room or into your life, they're there forever. You can never get them out. Now, luckily, it's a metaphor, but if it were true, would you be more selective about the people that you've let into your life?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Everyone says, yeah. So I would argue it's not a metaphor. I would argue that it's actually real. And here's why. I want you guys to think of somebody that you've gotten out of your life, because people say, I can get people out of my life. It's a metaphor. So I want you to think of someone you got out of your life. And I want you to think about why you wanted them out of your life. I want you to think about what they did that made you want them out of your life. So I want you to think of someone. I'm not going to ask you who it is, but do you have somebody in mind?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Now I want you to think of what it was they did that was the last thing. It's like, this is it. I want them out of my life. So do you have that one thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If they're still in your head, they're still in your room, and they will be for the rest of your life, because your room starts here and ends here. It's your mind. One of the people we interviewed was Dr. Daniel Amen for the book, and Dr. Amen is a psychiatrist, neuroscientist, and he said, look, when you have a relationship with someone, personal or professional, their fingerprints are all over your brain, and they will be forever. And so the idea of who's in your room is, who do you surround yourself with in your life? How do you create a doorkeeper who keeps people out of your life if you don't want them in there? And how do you curate the life of your dreams? And that's really what the book is all about.
I like it. And the core values got to be a big part of that. I mean,
values are huge. They're a huge part of the whole thing. If you don't know your personal values, then you can't, you know, your life is just a revolving door with people coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Man, oh man, we could talk to this guy for hours, huh? Chris and Joey.
Yeah. Where can we get that book? I want to read it.
Well, the book's available at most bookstores, but it's also available at Amazon. The second edition is the blue cover. It's the blue cover of the book, Who's in Your Room?
Wow.
Let's see if I have a copy of it here. Here, this is it. This is the second edition of Who's in Your Room.
I'm going to have to read it.
Yeah, take a look. Who's in Your Room? The question that will change your life. And it's really true. Honestly, I wish I didn't write it. I wish I had read it at 17. I'd had a good life. But I'd have even had a better life if I had read this book when I was 17 years old or in my 20s, because it really lays the groundwork for creating the life of your dreams.
There you go, Joey and Chris. You got to read it. Joey, you got to get your buddy, my son, Nick, to read it too.
Yeah. It blew my mind when he said that, think about the person you didn't want in your life, but they're still in your head, you know? So it's very important. Yeah. Make sure you're careful who you let in your life and who you surround yourself with. So,
yeah. And how do you deal with the ones that are in your life that you shouldn't have let in, or the ones that you had no choice over, like family members? How do you deal with them? And you talk about that in the book.
Yeah, I got
Chris, you know, we try to end this with all the takeaways and the nuggets of amazing information that we get. So Chris, I know I wrote down a lot of things that really took my trigger. I'm sure you and Joey a lot too. So go over, Chris, what you heard is like kind of top 5-10 things that really resonated that we want our listeners to kind of make sure that they get.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate what you sharing about the E-Myth book, the Entrepreneurial Myth. I read that book a couple of years ago, but it didn't. I guess I just wasn't ready for it. The way you're describing it, I was like, I need to read that like immediately. So I'm definitely going to check that out. You mentioned work on the business, not in the business. I've had that like just echoing in my head for at least the last 5 years, and it's made all the difference. Write everything down about your business as if you're going to franchise, even if you're not going to franchise. Because sometime down the road, you may realize, oh my gosh, like, I can franchise this, and then it'll be much more scalable. I loved your perspective on striving to be the Colonel Sanders of your business. I think that's a great North Star to aim towards. You can't have a 3-letter domain without being an early adopter. That really is, an amazing accomplishment to have a URL that's important. You really saw the writing on the wall there. The developments. If your head's in the freezer, your feet are in the oven, your average is pretty good.
Yeah, so, on average, you're okay.
Yeah, don't trust averages.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this is probably my favorite thing that you shared today among some really amazing nuggets. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. So, I mean, that's just, you know, wow, that packs a punch. That really just frames growing your business in a completely different and more powerful way. And I loved do 6 things 1,000 times to be successful.
Yeah. Thanks.
Where can people want to find out more about you?
Well, listen, at BNI.com, obviously, but I have a blog, IvanMeisner.com. It's all free stuff. I've been blogging for 15, 16 years. So there's hundreds, maybe more than 1,000 blogs up there, IvanMeisner.com.
Awesome.
So Ivan, really appreciate your time today. I mean, I got a lot of the same stuff that, you know, resonates with me. And Chris talked about some of the things really parallel with the way we build our business and what we think about our core values, or kind of do a lot of the same thing. Right? We talk about attitude, talk about, you know, accountability is a big deal for us. I love Giver's Game. You know, Giver's Game says it a little differently, but I love the giver game, and boy, if we can all live by that, and better. But I think of we have one business out of our 13 that actually has a boot camp, like you just said. And it's been on my mind for a while that we need to all our businesses have a boot camp, and we don't. So that, you know, you really re-energize me in that thought that I got to get on that. When in my industry, in my business, we always thought that really you got to do things for about 10,000 hours to do anything to be an expert, right?
Yeah.
In their life, you don't have a lot of 10,000 hour increments, right? So there's only
that's over 4 years full time.
I know, that's right, exactly. So, but even that, and you think about it, it's just, there's just not a lot of things you could be an expert at. But you handful of things most likely in your life that you can be an expert at. And you talk about six things 1,000 times, but I think it's very similar, and it's a different way to think about that. But like staying focused is a big deal for any of us in our lives, staying focused on the things we want to be great at, because there's too many things and too many places we can go to be mediocre at a lot of things, or we can be great and do six things 1,000 times, as you said. And I like that one as well. But really, your story is amazing, man, and I congratulate you on your success. It's fun being Colonel Sanders. I'm gonna have to grow my beard back because I like the look, and
I like the beard look too.
Thanks. I feel like you know, people don't think of their lives that way, but you know what? If I would have thought early on that I could be Colonel Sanders in my business, I think that's pretty cool. So that's one way I think we can inspire people to, you know, tell your story going backwards, or your vision that young people say. You want to be the Colonel Sanders of your business? It's a blast to be here. Here's what you know. Here's the work ethic. Here's what you got to do to be that, right?
Yeah.
You're just a great example of entrepreneurship. So we really appreciate having you on. Anything else you'd like to say?
I think the last thing I'd leave you with is, you know, the old saying that it's not what you know, it's who you know. I don't think it's either. I don't think it's what you know or who you know. It's how well you know each other that really counts. You know, I got some great contacts in my telephone, but the question is, could I call that person? Would they take my call? And if I asked them for a favor, would they be willing to do the favor? Yeah. So it's not just who you know, it's how well you know each other that really makes the difference. And that means it's all about building relationships.
Absolutely. What a great point. It's all about building trusting relationships where people actually, you know, want to pick up when they see a call, right? And just like, you know, you want people that you want to pick up for when they call you.
Exactly.
I have a good friend of mine, actually. That really reminds me of a quick story. I have a good friend of mine who is a very successful guy. He's got Portillo's hot dogs and Portillo's hamburgers and hot dog joints started all over Chicago area, and now they're spread across the country. This guy is one of the most successful guys I know. He's like you in that he's full of energy. He's older than us. He's 80, in his 80s now. But the guy's full of energy. You and I just love to hang around a guy like that, right? He called me today because he couldn't show up at an event I have at my house coming up. And I said, what's wrong? He goes, well, I got COVID and it's pretty bad. You know, I'm really, my headaches are terrible. I feel it's really the worst I've ever felt in my life. I said, man, I'm really sorry. So, you know, what are you doing for that? He goes, well, I went to the doctor. They told me to take this drug they sent me home with. So I said, well, let me make a call for you. So I'm blessed enough that Peter McCullough is a friend. And Peter McCullough is one of the foremost minds in this whole world of COVID and what to take and how to battle and all that. He picked up my call and told me, you know, he asked me the size, age of this friend of mine, his size of this friend of mine, all that. And then said, well, here's something you can look up, and because I don't want to tell you what to take, but here's something you can look up that's going to tell you exactly what you should be doing. But it's not what he's doing now. What he's doing now will not help his COVID. It might make him feel a little better for a little while. It's not going to kill it. And so anyway, again, for Peter McCullough, who's an amazing mind, I was happy, very happy
to help
on my call, because my friend is 83 years old, and he can't take a lot of this, in my opinion. So again, but that's exactly what you said, right? Somehow,
yeah,
a relationship of trust with this very, very important guy that takes, you know, as many people call him, he picked up for me. Again, that's what life's about, building trusting relationships as you continually do. To make your life easier, but people know you're making other people's lives easier. So
yeah,
that's why I picked up your call, and you're an awesome guy. So appreciate you having me on, and thanks for your time today.
Truly my pleasure. It was my pleasure to be on anytime.
If you enjoy this show, please share with anyone else you think will find value here. And please go to our website, ditchdiggerceo.com, for show notes, links, video clips, and more nuggets of entrepreneurial wisdom. Don't forget to follow me on social media at ditchdiggerceo.
Cans, paper routes, mowing lawns, careless hands. Daddy had six kids to raise. Factory and night. Learn by example, not the words you said. Watched his every move and followed his footsteps. Pick and shovel in these two hands.
To the
suit where a CEO I stand. Already had. watched them as they left to you.